the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Brother Harish Shankar from the Medicare Division of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. Hari completed his MBA program from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in the year 2002. And prior to that, he had done his BTech from the prestigious Indian Institute of Technology in Chennai. In his talk, he draws from many of his personal experiences with Bhagwan and tells us how he experienced unconditional love from Bhagwan after joining his university. He then goes on about how Bhagwan inspired him to learn the Vedas and how that changed his life. He now believes that in the current world divided by race and religion, the message of unity of the Vedas is of paramount importance. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall in Prashanti Nilayam during the Dasara celebrations in 2013. Stay tuned, dear listeners. After the talk, you will be treated to some beautiful songs from the album Streams of Bliss, produced by Sai Blossom. And for now, over to Brother Hari Shankar.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Placing my humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. First of all, thank you all of you for being here on this day. And it's a very special day. Tuesday, as it is a day that is special to the worship of Devi. And today is the commencement of the Veda Saptaha Jnana Yajnam, which is definitely one of the hallmark festivals of Prashanti Nilayam. Swami paid a lot of attention to the organizing of this particular function. And coinciding with that is the Grama Seva. So Swami used to say that the Veda Saptaha Jnana Yajnam is for knowledge. So the Jnana component, the component of knowledge, is taken care of by the Jnana Yajnam. And then you have the Grama Seva, which is the Karma Yajna, the offering of service. And as Swami used to say, Manava Seva is nothing but Madhava Seva. So this Karma Yajna is nothing but an offering to the Lord Himself. So that is the special significance of the Veda Saptaha Jnana Yajnam going on coincidental with the Grama Seva by the students of the institute. Now, I'd like to start with a recollection of a conversation that I had a few months ago. And I was on a train journey, and as it happens, you have co-passengers and the co-passengers start chatting you up. And one of them had, you know, usually when such a conversation goes on with me, so what happens is typically they say like, so where are you from? I say, I'm from Puttaparthi. They say, oh, Sri Sathya Sai Baba. I say, yes. And they ask me, so what are you doing there? So I say, I work in the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. And then they say like, is the trust doing okay? Like, is it going fine? And there's a mischievous part in my brain which wants to ask them, you know, you're looking at me, an employee of the trust. Do I look famished to you? I mean, obviously well-fed, well-nourished. Come on. I mean, the trust is obviously doing well. But seriously, like, I do understand where they are coming from, because they cannot see that this is a trust that is not founded or established by an ordinary individual. The inspiration, the energy that is behind all of us who work in the trust and its units is no ordinary human. It is God Himself. Swami has declared that these institutions are not meant for just a few years. They will stand for thousands of years. He has declared that. And we need not for any moment doubt as to what, you know, how the trust will perform. The trust has the blessings of Lord Himself, and it will continue to serve humanity forever and ever. Coming back to the conversation which I had with that co-passenger, he asked a very different question. It was a very interesting question. So he asked me, like, you were with Bhagwan Baba. You had his physical proximity. What was it like? You see, this was a person who had very little prior knowledge of who Bhagwan was. What little he knew was what he had read from the papers in the recent years. And he wanted to know for himself that from a person who was in his physical presence, what was it like for you? And that is a very interesting question, really. especially in India, we have a huge amount of literature which talks about the lives of sages and saints and avatars. The life of Lord Rama, we can read extensively from the Ramayana. Likewise, we have the Bhagavatam, where we can learn about Krishna's life the devotees had around him. And innumerable sages and saints, even in the present century. And even though we read so much about all these saints, sages and avatars, nothing can prepare you for the shower of love in the physical presence. Nothing can prepare you for that. Because that is a very unique experience. It is an experience of a different kind of love. A love that is so pure, so innocent, so refreshing, selfless. This is a very unique experience that you have in the presence of Bhagwan. And I do not know how really whether words can convey what is the kind of experience you have in the presence of the Lord. But I shall attempt to do so today. See, the love of Swami, the closest approximation that we have on earth, which when we say that this love is selfless, that it is pure, that it is innocent, the closest approximation we have on earth is the love of a mother. And we say, and for us it is not enough to describe Swami's love as a love of a mother. We say that it is a love of 1,000 mothers. That is a description which people give for the love of Swami. One aspect of this love I would like to bring out. When I first joined as a student at Bhagwan's university, it was the summer course way back in 2000, that is when I started as a student. And I recall the mixed feelings that I had when I joined. At first, there was this excitement of being in Swami's presence, being in His proximity. I knew the access that I could have, if I wished to, with Swami. At the same time, there was this feeling of a little bit of nervousness, a little bit of apprehension, that would Swami accept me? All the students, the other students, so many of them had been here since their childhood. They were grounded in His philosophy, they had been through His system. And here I had practically spent all my teenage years outside in a city, a typical city teenager's life. I did not know whether Swami would accept my mind the way it was at that time. And these were the feelings that were really racking my mind at that time. I remember being seated in the auditorium at the Brindavan, the institute campus over there. And it was a multitude of students, more than 1,000 students packed in that one auditorium. And seats were all full, so where some of us were seated were on the stairs leading to the auditorium. And we heard the news that Swami is coming to the auditorium to listen to the, to be there for the sessions. And the excitement was, we didn't know from which door Swami would enter. Typically He would enter from the side door, which is a very, you know, quick access to the stage. But today we received news that Swami had entered the auditorium from right at the back. That is, He would walk through all the students to get to the stage. So then that excitement grew. Now, having entered through the back door, which particular stairs would He take among the three? And He chose, to my great excitement, the stairs where I was sitting. And I was really praying, Swami, like, give me a sign that You will accept me, given whatever the life that I have lived, but allow me to be with You and feel that I am ready to receive Your grace, that I can receive Your grace. And as Swami walked down the stairs, many students were holding up their hands to support Swami. Of course, Swami didn't need the physical support. It was more of a chance. Everyone craved for that, you know, physical, that touch of Swami's hand. And like all the other students, I too held up. I held up, in fact, my hand, and the other hand, I also held up a few pens for Swami to bless. And as Swami walked, He came near me, He saw the pens, He touched the pens. And the next moment, he rested his hand on my head. And it was a very different, it's not like just he took support. I remember that he pressed his hand very, very, with a lot of force. And then he turned it just a little bit, just like that. And the sense that I was left with was one of complete acceptance, complete acceptance. I really got that feeling of, I really understood what love means at that moment. Because one of the ways we can look at love is accepting people just the way they are, without trying to change them, fix them, totally just the way they are. Just accept them. You can see in your own lives, typically with your children, with people who are very dear to you, you totally accept them the way they are. It doesn't matter to a mother that the rest of the world is looking at her child as a convict, as a prisoner, as a lawbreaker. It totally doesn't matter to the mother. All that the mother looks at, this is my child. And I will love that child. And this is the sense of acceptance. I was no convict, for God's sake, if somebody's thinking like, so, pretty ordinary teenager. But the sense of acceptance that I got, that freedom that I felt in the presence of Swami, and that told me that I was in the presence of a very, very unique being. That his was a love that was not confined to a limited few. Like how we have, as human beings, we love a handful of human beings around us, a cluster. Our family, extended family, maybe a few friends. But this is a very unique being. In his presence, anyone, absolutely anyone, could feel the presence of love. His love was available in bounty to just about anybody who sought it. This was the experience that I had. And mind you, when we say mother, he's not mother just to each one of us. He's mother to the entire creation. And this is something that I had personally witnessed, which really confirmed this for me. It was in the year 2000. It was the Krishnashtami or Gokulashtami celebrations that were going on. So typically at that time, what would happen was that even now that tradition still continues. We get the cows and the number of animals from Swami's cow shed, Gokulam it's called. The students bring it in a procession to Mandir. And then Swami would ritually, he would feed almost all the cows and all the animals Swami would bless. Now that day, among all the animals that were brought, there was a fresh entrant. And that was a small little deer, a kid deer that had been brought to the Mandir. Now, if any of you have seen those functions, believe me, the amount of noise that is present at that time, there will be Vedam chanting will be going on, and then there will be music of three different types. Bhajans will be going on, and somebody will be playing the Nadaswaram. It's almost a cacophony. And it is very frightening to the animals. And the cows were totally accustomed to it, having come for so many years, even the Sai Gita was. But this little deer was there for the very first time. And you can imagine the fright. The people who were holding it was trying to literally jump out of their hands. I mean, it jumped out of one and somebody else caught it. And they were trying their best. And because Swami was coming near the animals, there was so much more excitement. Because everybody was crowding there near the animals. And that had the deer in a total fright. And I was just pitying the person who was holding that deer. Because he was holding on literally for dear life. And after a while, like, Swami blessed all the cows. And then he came to where the deer was standing. And he was watching all this that was going on. I was just kneeling down a few feet away. So I really had a ringside view of what was going on. So there's a lot of agitation in this deer. And then Swami just stretched out his hands to hold the deer. And people were wondering, whether this should be done. They didn't know how the deer would, supposing it kicked, what would happen. Swami just asked, he just stretched out his hands and the deer was placed in his hands. And believe me, all that agitation, all that fright, it completely just ceased absolutely at that moment. It became very still in his hands. It was a very revealing moment for me. Just because a few seconds ago, I had seen the agitation in that deer's hands. The moment Swami took it in his hands, in his bosom, it immediately, completely became still. Very, very tame, very docile. And I could only imagine what was going through the deer's mind. Somewhere, perhaps, the thought had entered its mind that now it was safe in the hands of its own creator, in the hands of its mother, the universal mother. This is a scene that I can really never forget. I remember that the photograph is there of Swami holding that deer. It was featured in that year's Sanatan Sarathi. Somewhere I do have that photograph with me. It is very dear to me, a reminder of the universal mother that Swami is. This image of Swami or Lord holding a deer or a lamb in his hand is typically, it is used in the Christian theology, and they say that the Lord is our shepherd. In fact, even in the college auditorium, there's a huge painting, a huge frieze of Jesus. He is holding a tiny little lamb in his hand, and he's standing there as a shepherd. So the Lord is our shepherd. But somewhere, without any offense to anybody, I somehow feel that it does not capture an element of God's love, that it is so personal. If I look at the image of a shepherd who is herding his sheep, like it is a flock. It's a flock of sheep. There are so many sheep. But what I have sensed, what I have seen in Swami's love, that it is so upfront, so personal for each person. There is no one who can claim that, you know, that Swami's love is exclusive to somebody else. Swami's love is there for every single person in almost the same measure. It's just the way we perceive it. And that is how a mother loves her children, isn't it? Does a mother differentiate between like this child or that child in its love? See, a mother over here is saying no, absolutely no chance. Right? The mother's love is equal to every single person. And in this regard, I recall, it's a very comical incident that happened. So there was this friend of mine. We were coming to Darshan, and it was a Sunday morning. We were all walking as fast as we could to reach Mandir. And on the way, for some reason, you know, he started discussing with us as to why Swami would not talk to him. Like, he had a set of criteria. He said, if Swami has to talk to somebody, that person has to have some kind of talent, or he must, you know, there must be some emergency in his life, or all sorts of criteria. And even when we were sitting in Mandir, this discussion continued. It was half in jest. I mean, all of us were quite entertained by what he was saying. At the same time, I could sense a little bit of pain in that, you know, he wanted Swami's attention. He wanted Swami to talk to him. That was certainly there. And as this, you know, the conversation continued on these lines, we are trying to tell him, no, 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 Swami will talk to you. Don't have to worry. You just need to pray. He says, no, 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 Swami will not talk to me. You know, this typical student's way of thinking, a child's way of thinking. And Swami finished the darshan. He went into the interview room. And, you know, this boy, he had that hope that Swami would talk to him. And he said, see, Swami closed off the interview room door. Now there is no chance of him talking to me. And it was not like we were in the front row that he could have held a letter or somehow got Swami's attention. We were sitting way back in the 8th or the 9th row and almost towards the side. And that day, the interview concluded very quickly, maybe in about 15 or 20 minutes. It was a little different from the usual routine. And Swami walked down very quickly to the portico, just about where the students normally sit. And from there, that distance, he beckoned to just one boy. And that was the person who all the time from that morning for about 2 hours, he just kept on saying, Swami is not going to talk to me. And Swami called just that boy, spoke to him, and then resumed the interview. You see, it was so amazing for me. Like, of course, by then I must confess, it became pretty commonplace to see that Swami knew everything that was going on, that nothing was hidden to him, that nothing had to be told to him. But again and again, you know, every time when we used to experience this, it was refreshing and just as amazing. And only we, you know, the people who were just sitting around him, only we knew the context in which the entire event had happened. We knew that that boy was pining for Swami's attention. And Swami sent a very, very clear message. If you need me, you deserve me. There is no special criteria that we need when it comes to Lord's love. If you need the Lord, you deserve the Lord. That's all it takes. There is no special prayer required. All that is required is for you to cry out to the Lord. There is no special wisdom required. Very clear message. All that you need to do is to cry out to the Lord, and He will make sure that His love, His grace reaches you. That is the confidence that I have in Swami's love, that it is available to each one of us the moment we ask for it. He has no reason to hold His love back. That is the experience that I have had. Again, coming back to the conversation that I was having in the train with my co-passenger, it suddenly occurred to me that what a wonderful thing was happening right there in that train. And what a wonderful thing is happening even here, right now. You see, the conversations that we generally have as human beings in society with each other, we talk shop, we gossip most of the time. There is no intention to what we are saying most of the time. We talk, we gossip, you know, so and so did this, and then he said this to me, and I said this to him, and I went and did that, and I did this. I visited so and so, this relative came to my house, you know, that is the conversation that we normally tend to have. But here we are, and we were in that train, we were having a very, very sacred conversation. In Zen, there was a particular Zen monastery where they had a very beautiful rule to be observed when it came to speaking. In general, there was silence to be observed all over the monastery. Every monk had to do his meditation, his work, and to the extent possible, observe silence. There was only one event where you could break that rule, and that was speak only if you can improve the silence. It sounds very contradictory, isn't it? Speak only if you can improve the silence. And that is the conversation that we are having. Mulling over the Lord, His stories, His love, what does it do to each one of us is to completely silence that agitation, our needless thoughts, our needless anxieties, concerns, worries, the unnecessary conversations that we have about people around us, the judgments that we pass, the little hates, the little anger that we feel, all that is completely sort of cleaned up by having this conversation about the Lord. It is a very beautiful sadhana in itself. And that was what was going on in the train and what is going on right now. And we can really thank Bhagwan for each, you know, for each such time where our mind dwells on Him. Whether we know it or not, we are performing such a great sadhana, a beautiful sadhana, so enriching to the soul, so much in contrast to what each one of us does every day. These few hours, this 1 hour that we spend, the time we spend in the bhajan hall, in the Lord's presence, that completely alters our view of what the world is. Our view generally is that we need to counter people, that we need to manipulate them, we need to survive them. But being in the Lord's presence completely changes the way we think about people. The element of love enters into it. We begin to look at people with a more forgiving eye, and our perspective changes to one of concern. How can I help the person who is next to me? What is he dealing with? How can I make a difference in that person's life? That is a perspective that the Lord's presence really brings in each one of us. And talking of the transformation that Swami effects, you see, like I, even today, where I was coming from was actually, I was on the stage for the Veda Saptah Jnana Yajnam, and I am part of the Vedam group that chants every day in Mandir. So, I was there on the Veda, on this particular stage, and I was thinking to myself, like, if about maybe, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, I had thought to myself that one day I would be sitting on a stage like that and chanting mantras, like, you know, I wouldn't have believed it at all if somebody had told me that this is what is going to happen in your life. Because about 10 or 15 years ago, my mind was just consumed with one thing, and that is to become totally successful in the field that I was in. The Indian Institute of Technology is a premier engineering institute in this country. And when I secured admission to that, I had just one desire, and that was to migrate to the United States of America as soon as possible. In fact, Dr. Venkatraman, who is the director of Radio Sai, he puts it in a very interesting way. He says that when students clear the entrance examination to that particular institute, so what happens is their soul migrates to the United States, and their body joins 4 years later. So that's how it was for all of us practically over there. But when Swami entered my life, the entire perspective changed. The way I looked at myself, at my role in society, the desires that I had, all of them were completely altered. And very specifically, when it comes to Vedam, I think I must recount this. Actually, to tell you the truth, I had absolutely no interest in Vedam, mantras, rituals, temples. I had no interest at all in these things. Although I come from a family which is completely oriented towards Vedam, my uncle is a Veda Ghanapati, that is, he has studied the Vedam for 21 years. And my father himself, he had studied for Vedam for 7 years. And till about 2-3 years ago, in fact, he used to give aarti to Swami in the Mandir. So I come from a family where when I used to wake up to the sound of Vedic mantras. But somehow the interest in me, that never really did, you know, blossom. Because all the time my orientation was towards success and money. And when I joined here as a student too, I found it very difficult to go for the Vedam classes and learn Vedam. So when I joined as staff, I joined as somebody who had absolutely no knowledge of Vedam at all. Now, Dashra of 2004, Swami calls one of my classmates, a very close friend of mine, who was also working in the Sathya Sai Central Trust. Swami calls him to the stage on Purnachandra and gave him 5 dhotis, and he said, tell me the names of 5 students who are working in various institutions in the ashram, and I will give the dhoti to them. And this guy was totally flustered. I mean, he never anticipated that Swami would ask a question like this. He's totally not prepared. The first name that came to his mind was his friend's name, which is me. Just like that. And a few minutes ago, like, Swami gave him the dhotis. He comes to me and he gives me the red dhoti, and I'm wondering what is going on. And he says, like, Swami has given this dhoti for you. And I was like, for what? He says, no, you have to be part of the Veda Saptah Jnana Yajna. And I don't know any mantra. And Swami has given me this. What am I supposed to do? I don't. And believe me, at that time, the children of primary school, they used to know much more than I did the mantras. And at that time, Swami gave me this the dhoti, passed it through my friend, and he said, be a part of that. Now, that first year, I made every effort to be at the farthermost corner where Swami could not see my ignorance. And even then, it was not a very good experience, because every day I was aware of the fact that the small children around me knew more mantras than I did, that I was silent the whole time. You know, they knew much more. And at that moment, I thought, okay, you know, I must learn a little bit of the mantras, some that I had learned when I was small. Let me revise them to begin with. And by that time, Swami had formally created a Vedam group that would start, which would chant Vedam in the mandir for the morning and evening darshans. And as this was going on, I used to listen to them, and on my own I used to try and learn the mantras. And since my father was, of course, he had learned the Vedam, I asked him to teach me Rudram and so on. And in about 15 days time, I remember, it took me to learn Rudram. I was very confident that I could chant without seeing the book. On that particular day, a very interesting event happened. Now, the Vedam chanting was going on as it is in the Vedam block, in the Mandir block. And I was seated behind the Ganesha. That is, if you remember, the Ganesha that is now at the Gopuram entrance used to be on the portico in the Kulwant Hall. And I was seated behind that. And Swami was walking in that path. And as he was coming, we were chanting one mantra. It's called the Shivopasana mantra. It goes like Nidhanapataye Namaha, Nidhanapatantikaya Namaha. So I was chanting that. It was one of the safe mantras that it is very easy to pick up. So luckily for me, I was very confident of that mantra. And there was with very good reason, because Swami was walking down that path. And looking at Swami, I was chanting this particular mantra, and Swami looked at me from a distance. He came, he stood right in front of me. And it was an experience in itself, like looking at Swami directly and chanting the mantras. And what happened next was, Swami began repeating the lines with me. So he chanted two lines of that particular mantra, and all the time he is looking at me, and luckily I didn't blank out, I didn't space out, I could still continue to chant the mantra. Swami was looking at me, and at the end Swami said, Dunnapota, like, why is if you can chant the mantra, why are you sitting here? Go and be part of that group. And I cannot really make you understand the fright that was in me at that moment. How do I go and explain to my boss now that that during office hours I won't be in the office, I'll be sitting in mandir chanting mantras? And one more interesting thing that happened was, in that particular mantra there was one word which for some reason my pronunciation differed from Swami's pronunciation, and I was not sure which one of us was wrong. So that evening I went and asked my father, and believe me, to my enormous relief, Swami was absolutely right. I mean, like, as children, as devotees, we tend to think in that way. No, I was right, Swami was wrong. But believe me, the pronunciation was absolutely perfect. And it gave me an opportunity to actually correct some of the others, because we were tending to mispronounce that particular word. And so that was how, like, willy-nilly, Swami actually pushed me into being part of this group. I had no interest whatsoever. I had no inclination of any kind. And being part of the Vedam group has really allowed me to study what was Indian philosophy, what the way our scriptures talk about us as human beings in this world. And it is very, very extraordinary. I cannot think of, years ago, centuries ago, millennia ago, people, they had no access to any kind of technology, no research. In such primitive conditions right then, see, the access to technology right now, what it makes us feel is that we are masters of nature, that we can use nature just the way we want it to, right? And at that moment, it was a totally different perspective, because they were at the mercy of the elements of nature with very little protection, and it was always felt that man is not equal to his nature. Not that now it is like man is master of his nature, but at that time it was like man is, he is completely dominated by nature. And at that moment, at a time like that, the sages had the vision to stand up and say that this man that you see over here and the sun that you see that is shining, they both are one. You see, this is one of the statements in the Vedas that says, Yaschayam Purushe, Yaschasava Ditye, that is the sun over there, Sa Ekaha, these two are one. What an extraordinary statement to make. It is something that goes way beyond our experience. It is something that the sages have intuited. And it is not just that sun and I are one. We are all of us over here sitting, though we have the experience that we are separate individuals. What the Vedas declare is that each one of us at the essence is just the same. It's only the appearances that deceive us. There is a unity among each one of us, not just human beings, all living creatures, and not just living creatures, the entire universe. And what a wonderful way of thinking. Our way of thinking that we are separate from each other, that we have to survive each other, look at where it has got us. The amount of strife that we see, and I really cannot predict which way the ecology is going. See, our philosophy of thinking that each one of us is there alone in this world and has to fend only for himself and fights only for himself, as versus the philosophy that we see in the Vedas. It is such a powerful, such a beautiful philosophy. And time and time and time again, I hope that one day we shall truly understand what this message is, that we can adopt it in our daily lives. It has so much potential for peace, for beauty in this world. And there's a crying need today. The Veda Saptaha Jnana Yajna is not merely for us to just listen to the mantras. It is there for us to dwell on that very beautiful message there is. The message of oneness. Even today, like we are experiencing right now, the effects of such of thoughts which are divisive. They want to divide a state on the basis of a dialect of a language. That is the amount of divisiveness in our society. As if it was not enough that we have divisions on the basis of race, on the basis of caste, on the basis of religion, on the basis of language. Now they've introduced a new division called on the basis of dialect. There is a crying need for unity, at least at the level of human beings. We are not even able to strive towards experiencing that kind of unity, leave alone unity with the entire creation itself. That comes at the next level. This is the importance of Vedam. It is not merely to learn the mantra. Swami used to place a lot of emphasis on being able to understand their essence, their meaning. It is an invitation for each one of us. And this is my experience, believe me, in the sense that, as I said, I really didn't know for what reason Swami was pushing us to get into this Vedam chanting. But now I can see very clearly why this whole world, why he used to insist that everyone, no matter what their caste was, no matter what their religion was, they should learn the Vedas. Not that they become Hindus overnight. It was not for that reason. He used to say the Vedas are there for everybody because the Vedas are wisdom. Veda Saptaha Jnana Yajna. The Jnana is not knowledge, it is wisdom. And in this way, you see, Swami as the mother, he really, whether, you know, a child, sometimes it does not know what is good for it. And Swami has to force as a mother. It's like a mother administering a pill, a bitter pill or a tonic. And that is the function that Swami performs for each one of us as a parent. And because so far, like the many experiences that we hear of Swami is more on the terms of like Swami protected me at a time when I needed it, or Swami taught me a certain lesson. Yes, that is the role of a parent. I do agree. But Swami as a mother performs the role of a spiritual mother. He caters not only just to us as the body or the mind, but he also caters, he nourishes, cherishes our spirit, who we really are deep inside. And in this regard, I'd like to talk about one more aspect of Swami teaching me about the Gayatri Mantra and its significance. You see, as I said, I was born in a Vedic household, and we were taught, when very, very young, we were taught about the Gayatri Mantra, we were initiated into that mantra. And then, my father and my parents, they actually told me that this mantra will help you in gaining success in your academics, in your studies. So that was the reason why I held on to that mantra. I, I really used to chant it, you know, as often as possible when I was small, so that I could stand first in my class and first in the examinations. That was the only intent as far as I was concerned. The Gayatri Mantra, its usefulness was for me to achieve success in academics. That's all it meant for me. And years later, I found myself in the engineering college. The entire practice of chanting the Gayatri Mantra, all that had completely evaporated in my life. And at this time, I had once come to Prashanti Nilayam, and my mind, as I said, was totally now fixated on how do I get the physical grace of Swami. I wanted to get Padnamaskar from Swami. I wanted Swami to talk to me. And I just didn't know how it would happen. And I would come to Prashanti Nilayam as often as I could and come like in the token line and sit. Many times I had got the front line, and I'm sure all of you would have had this experience. You're waiting for Swami and to take his Padmanabhaskar. Swami will come as close to you as you, like where you can stretch your hand, at that moment walk to the opposite side. And that was a frustrating experience I had time and time and time again, till at one moment I began to think that Swami is intentionally, he is, you know, denying me this Padmanabhaskar. He has a very particular agenda and so important to him that he will deny Padmanabhaskar. That was the exaggerated feeling that I had. But it pained me a lot, it hurt me a lot that I was not able to get this, you know, this one experience of being able to touch his feet. And when I went back to Chennai, to my hostel, I started mulling over, like, what is it that I need to do? And it is with these thoughts that I went to sleep. And that night, I had a dream. And in that, for some reason, I am an old woman. I don't know how I became that way in that dream, but I am an old woman. And there I am sitting among the old women in Darshan. And this was, you know, way back. The scene that I could see was Darshan before Kulwant Hall, when there were just sands and coconut trees. And I was in that sitting as an old woman, sitting over there. And then Swami is walking past me, and as was my experience with Swami at that time, not even looking at my side. But in that dream, somehow I got that, you know, the courage to stand up and ask, Swami, Swami, I called out. And then Swami turned towards me, and again he turns away. Then again that cry came out, Swami, I want you to talk to me. And then Swami said, you have no strength. And I, you know, even now actually I'm not pretty sure what that meant. But at that time I just remember being so desperate, because I didn't know what does it mean to say, Swami saying you have no strength. But luckily I had the presence of mind in that dream to ask Swami, Swami, what should I do to gain that strength? And then Swami said, chant the Gayatri Mantra. And I asked, I don't know how it happened, but the very next question, Swami, how many times a day should I chant? And Swami said, chant it 108 times. And I began that, like every single day, that I would go on chanting the Gayatri Mantra. And believe me, as events progressed, when I look back, I can see the effect of that particular mantra in my being able to get closer and closer to my Lord. At first, it was, I craved that I should be able to get some opportunity to serve. Because I had read in Swami's discourses that it is through service that you will earn my grace. And there, in that engineering college, I did not find any access, any means to be able to join a service group. And as I prayed more and more, just by pure chance, I got into the Hyderabad youth group who would go for this Grama Seva activities. And then again, I actually got an opportunity to serve as Sevadal, which is when I got my first Padmanabhaskar. And it went on. Even as a student, I distinctly remember this, that once there was something, a problem that was really pressing me, I wanted Swami to talk to me that day. And what I decided was that I would chant the Gayatri Mantra with all the, you know, faith that I could and all the concentration that I could muster. And as chanting, Swami was there in the interview room as I was chanting this mantra. Then, as I said, I had to chant it 108 times. And Swami, at one point of time, I saw the interview room door open. He walked out And at that moment, the confidence grew in me. I knew what was going to happen next. I remember when I chanted the 107th time, Swami had just turned the portico. By the time I finished the 108th time of repetition, Swami was there standing right in front. And the moment I finished, he asked, "What is your name?" And yet another experience with the chanting of the Gayatri Mantra. I had a great desire that when I chant one particular line, which says, "Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi." So this particular line in the Gayatri Mantra is, I meditate on your effulgence. And I wanted to chant that particular mantra, like looking totally into Swami's face and he looking into my eyes. And it happened almost towards the end of my term as a student, but almost towards the last days. I was getting really desperate whether, you know, I wanted to continue to remain in Swami's presence after my student life also. And Swami was giving me absolutely no sign what he wanted me to do. And darshan in Vrindavan, it was going on, and I was really chanting the Gayatri Mantra with all the, you know, like faith that I could muster. And just at that time, when Swami was walking right past, I remember he just suddenly turned and looked deep into my eyes. And as I had prayed for all that time, it was that particular line, "Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi." And Swami smiled at me as I said, "Dhiyo Yonaf Prachodayat." Because for me, this mantra and the way I related to it, at first, it was a mantra for me to gain academic success. And later, it became a mantra for me to attain Swami's physical proximity. But at that moment, I realized that what this mantra is truly about. This mantra is all about wisdom. It is the highest prayer that man can have. It is the wisdom that clears away all the desires. We can chant mantras so as to obtain material desires or even the grace of God. But ultimately, what this mantra is there for, why the Lords have given us this particular mantra, is to gain wisdom. It is the wisdom that takes us away from all desires, from all the misery that we experience in this world. It is the wisdom that tells us who we truly are, deep within who we truly are, as against what each one of us has taken ourselves to be. And as this Veda Saptaha Jnana Yajnam happens, I think that this is the prayer that each one of us must adopt. When Swami Vivekananda, in his life, there was a time when there was a lot of turmoil. His father had just passed away, and he had siblings. He was the eldest. He had siblings to take care of, and his mother who had to be attended to. And he didn't have a job, nothing to fend for themselves. And at that time, he actually stopped coming to Dakshineshwar to the presence of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, because he was out there looking for a job for himself. And his absence in Dakshineshwar became so prolonged that Ramakrishna Paramahamsa actually sent word through some devotees asking, "Why is Naren not coming at all to Dakshineshwar?" So Narendranath, as he used to be known then, he comes to the presence of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. And then Ramakrishna Paramahamsa asks him, "Why are you not coming nowadays?" And he says, "See, I don't think that I can come here any longer. I have a family to look after. I have to go back and fend for them. I will have to look for a job, work hard and earn some money." And Ramakrishna Paramahamsa begins to laugh. He says, "You are in the presence of the mother herself. And you think you need to go out and work? Go. Mother Kali is here." And he, as you all know, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to see the mother goddess herself in that idol of Kali. And he says, go to that mother Kali and ask her for money. She will give you. Definitely she will give you. And Swami Vivekananda goes, he stands in front of that idol. He knows that whatever he asks for, he will surely get. That is the power of his guru. And he stands in front of that idol. He is unable to ask for money. He goes back to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, and again Ramakrishna Paramahamsa laughs at him. And in fact, acts as if he's a little upset. He says, "What are you? You're such a fool. You went and stood in front of that idol. You didn't ask for anything. Are you dumb?" And again, Swami Vivekananda goes and stands there in front of the idol. Yet again the words don't come out. He's not able to do it. He goes back to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa and asks him, what should I do? He says, no, go back. Go back to the mother. She will give whatever you ask for. Have that confidence. And this time he knew what he would ask for. He went, stood in front of that idol, and what he asked for is for wisdom and devotion. He knew that this was the greatest wealth that he could have craved for. You are standing in the presence of the mother, even here right now. You are in the presence of mother herself, the mother of the universe. It's a fantastic opportunity for each one of us. We can ask whatever we crave for. Believe me, it will be granted. We can pray for our families, for them to be prosperous. We can pray for success for each one of us. But what is far greater than all this is something that Swami Vivekananda has taught us by his own example. And when we have the opportunity to be here in front of Swami, and all of us know how much love, how much kindness Swami has, we know that his heart is like butter. The moment we pray, he will move. He will be moved and he will move to grant us our wishes. And it is with each one of us, what is that wish we want to make of Swami? And let us be clear that the wish, that the prayer that we have, that all of us have, can only be for devotion to Swami and for wisdom.
Ekumkar Satna Karta Purak Nirpar Nirvair Akal Murat Arjuni Sevam Guru Parasad Jap Aad Sach Jugaad Sach Hai Bhi Sach नानक होसी भी सच गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु Guru Mee
तोड़ो पिया मैं ना ही तोड़ू रे संतों से प्रीत तोड़े कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू, कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू।
मुरली मनोहर मोहन
कौन संग जोड़ू, कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू।
मुरली मनोहर मोहन गिरिधर, 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 मुरली मनोहर मोहन गिरिधर।
तुम्हारा रिश्ता इस दिल से दिल ही समझ पाएगा, दूर होके भी तुमसे तुम्हारा एहसास करवाएगा। पर आज तुम्हारी यादों में खोया किसी बात पर ये रूठा है, ओ मां तुम बिन बेजुबा होने की शिकायत कर बैठा है, बेजुबा होने की शिकायत कर बैठा है।
Sari 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 da, श्री राम जय राम जय राम श्री राम जय राम जय जय राम श्री राम जय राम जय जय राम श्री राम जय राम जय जय राम श्री राम जय राम
श्री राम
Yeah.
Tell me.